For many years, the conversations and conflicts were honed within the venues of black culture. Tenets and strategies within the equality movement produced a racial think tank, a hybrid of spiritual, intellectual, militant, and vocation-oriented forces, and two starkly contrasting paths emerged in quest for racial equality. In the first years, Open Rebellion took a backseat to an elevation of vocational expertise in order to recast the black Americans in a new and improved light before the eyes of white society. The anticipated reward saw a former slave class as newly educated, intelligent, reliable, and less threatening. Within such an undisturbed social equation, the black family was to freely participate in the nation's economic fortunes, gaining access to professional advancements once deemed to be exclusively white domain. In time, black workers were intended to merge with white society in the marketplace and find release from Jim Crow restrictions, including unfettered voting rights. Conversely, the second and more confrontational approach demanded instant equality with an already sensitive white population dreading a mass uprising on their doorsteps. The insistence of immediate inclusion in education, politics, and corporate involvement came from charismatic young firebrands, many of them preachers and professors from outside the South. The church, among other institutions of the early 20th century, was a prime vehicle for social mobilization in at least the emotional sense. In tandem with spiritual unity, the development of black intellectualism was intended to challenge white predominance in pursuit of executive levels of employment and to encourage the pride of outright ownership. The living conditions and racial status of Booker T. Washington at his birth offered scarce promise of later accomplishments as one of the most influential intellectuals of the late 19th century. Birth records were notoriously scarce or inaccurate, even for white citizens in many of the country's rural areas. So it's no surprise that for a boy born only a few years before the Civil War's a slave, the odds were a good deal steeper against confirming a date. Washington himself professed ignorance of his own childhood, but April 5, 1856 is an accepted consensus. His birthplace is generally designated as Hales Ford of Franklin County, Virginia, on a farm of 207 acres near Smith Lake. His owners under the law at that time were James T. and Elizabeth Burroughs. The prophetic first name of Booker remains a mystery, but the middle initial of his owners signifies the Taliaferro family, prominent in the highest Virginia circles. Washington was a mulatto slave, and the general assumption holds that his father was a white man from a plantation somewhere in the region, but since slaves were bought and sold at will with no regard for the preservation of a cohesive family, it is doubtful that Washington knew his entire family. Indeed, as an adult, he professed total ignorance of his ancestry or anyone outside his immediate family. As the major economic system of the nation revolved around factories, the South remained largely agrarian, and in this environment, the geographical range of farm slaves' working life in the South could be considerably larger than the confines of an immovable factory occupying a city block. Washington's mother was known only as Jane until 1860, when she married Washington Ferguson, a slave from a nearby plantation. Soon after Ferguson's marriage with Jane, Washington's stepfather escaped to West Virginia. Outside of an encounter at Christmas, the family did not see him until the Civil War's end. Jane Ferguson gave birth to three children, but there may have been others who were sold in the region. Washington's older brother, John, was also mulatto, with the lighter complexion and light gray eyes of his younger brother. His white father remains unidentified as well. As the plantation's cook, Jane's cabin of approximately 14 by 16 feet was used as the estate's general kitchen. In his childhood, Washington never saw a wooden floor and never slept in a functional bed, instead relying on nothing more than bundles of rags, regardless of the season. His daily dress included a flax shirt, which he recalled as having been as painful as chestnut burrs. Washington later wrote, "I cannot recall a single instance during my childhood or early boyhood when our entire family sat down at the table together and God's blessing was asked and the family ate a meal in a civilized manner." On the plantation in Virginia, and even later, meals were gotten to the children very much as dumb animals get theirs.